coming up on KUCB News, city officials reported 10 new cases of COVID-19 yesterday. And a man from Minnesota hiked from Alaska's Inside Passage to the start of the Aleutian Chain. Stay tuned.
Programming on KUCB is made possible by Redfish Electronics, now providing new, used, and refurbished computers, tablets, iPods, MP3s, phones, phone accessories, and flat screens. We also carry external hard drives for your digital storage needs. Redfish Electronics is located in the airport parking lot next to Northport Rentals. Redfish Electronics can be reached at 359-2205.
Good afternoon. You're listening to KUCB 89.7 FM on Alaska. I'm Maggie Nelson with some local news on Tuesday, January 5th, 2021. City officials reported 10 new positive cases of COVID-19 in Unalaska yesterday. According to the city's news release, all of those cases are industry related. As of yesterday, 210 people had tested positive for the virus in Unalaska. 17 of those cases are currently active. Meanwhile, the first doses of the COVID-19 vaccine were administered last month in Unalaska. Clinic officials say they expect a second round of Moderna vaccines to arrive soon. Technology has come a long way in the 100 years since Togo and Balto helped mush life-saving diphtheria serum nearly 1,000 miles to Nome. But getting the new COVID-19 vaccines to rural Alaska is still no small logistical feat. Tribal healthcare providers are mustering a fleet of bush planes and are even riding snow machines and sleds to get shots into the arms of elders and frontline workers. Nat Herz with Alaska Public Media has more.
About 50 miles north of the Arctic Circle in the tiny northwest Alaska village of Ambler, Dr. Katrina Bengard is on a mission to deliver some of the first doses of COVID-19 vaccine, a job that required her to climb on the back of a snow machine. Bengard was returning from a home visit to a 92-year-old elder who couldn't make it into Ambler's clinic to get the vaccine. It was part of a day when Bengard and a few of her colleagues flew to three different villages in the region to deliver vaccinations. To get from the airports into town, Bengard says she and her team rode on sleds dragged behind a snow machine.
We were also, of course, holding on to all our bags, all of our equipment that we were bringing with us for the vaccinations. So our job was to keep ourselves as well as all the luggage in the sled as we bounced along through the snow.
Many of Alaska's first COVID-19 vaccinations have happened in hospitals in Alaska's urban centers. But far from there, a parallel effort is playing out as rural providers give out the shots on frigid airport tarmacs and at village clinics. Providers say they came up with meticulous plans to keep the vaccine chilled and distribute it to dozens of villages that lack advanced medical care, ultra-cold freezers, road connections, and cooperative weather.
We were on like plan four by halfway through the first day.
Ellen Hodges is a doctor and chief of staff at Yukon Kuskokwim Health Corporation, the tribal healthcare provider in southwest Alaska. YKHC's airborne vaccine program is called Project Togo, in a nod to the legendary sled dog, and Hodges was on the first of many chartered flights. Hodges says she flew with the Pfizer vaccine in her lap for safekeeping when her plane arrived at the first village where temperatures were minus 5 or 10 without wind chill. She encountered a uniquely Alaskan problem.
It became immediately apparent that the vaccine was going to freeze in the metal part of the needle. And so we had to really be careful about that. So I would have the vaccines tucked in my shirt until right before we gave them.
After giving the final shots, the providers would wait 20 minutes with patients in a truck or a plane before moving on to make sure there were no allergic reactions. And if they ended a day with more doses left over than they needed in the villages, they had a list of people on call to be vaccinated as soon as the plane landed back in Bethel, the regional hub town. Dr. Tom Hennessy, an Anchorage epidemiologist and infectious disease specialist, says there's value in showing that the tribal providers can pull off this complicated choreography.
Vaccination in a really difficult setting, like transporting vaccine by plane that has very kind of fussy characteristics, if we can get that to work in rural Alaska, it may be a sign that it can work in other challenged parts of the world, too.
The effort is also inspiring at a more romantic level, too, Hennessy says, evoking the history of the serum run to Nome a century ago.
We have these deep stories of Alaska adventure that are related to public health. And here's another one playing out right before our eyes.
For now, vaccinations are continuing across rural villages, with providers expanding access beyond healthcare workers to essential workers and elders like Donnie Olson. Olson is a state senator who lives in the remote western Alaska village of Golovin. He's also a pilot, and he has a radio at his house that's tuned into air traffic so he can hear who's coming and going. On Wednesday, he heard an announcement that got his attention. The mail plane was 10 miles out with a load of vaccine for the village on board.
When the caravan came flying over and we heard it on the radio, we could breathe a little easier that they're here. It's not bad weather. It's not going to stop them from coming. And when they landed and got the steel treatment in the shoulder, that was a great relief for us as a whole family.
Olson still has to get his booster shot in a few weeks, but he says he's already feeling relieved that he's more likely to be around to watch his young kids grow up. In Anchorage, I'm Nat Herz.
Washington, Oregon, and more than two dozen Native American and Alaska Native tribes are suing the federal government to stop the sale of the National Archives building in Seattle. The sale would force the relocation of millions of invaluable historical records to California and Missouri. The government is planning to sell the vast warehouse under a law aimed at unloading excess civilian property. But the lawsuit filed in U.S. District Court on Monday says the building is anything but excess. It contains irreplaceable documents dating to the 1840s and is used all the time for research about everything from tribal history to Japanese internment during World War II. From mid-June to mid-October, two hikers trekked across Alaska, making their way down the Alaska Peninsula to Unimak Island at the start of the Aleutian Chain. One of the hikers, a man from Minnesota, began his traverse in Yakutat, logging around 2,500 miles along the way. He collected several memorable experiences, some of which were more alarming than others.
You're gonna die. Like, it's the craziest strait, and boats flip over. And so, yeah, we were a little...
That's Dan Bindi. He sat in a Walmart in Minnesota as he recounted to me his experience hiking from Yakutat in the northern reaches of Alaska's Inside Passage to Unimak, the largest and easternmost of the Aleutian Islands. He says that people repeatedly warned him and his friend and fellow hiker, Kawak Naweng, that crossing the strait between False Pass, a town located on Unimak Island, and the Alaska Peninsula could be incredibly dangerous, that sometimes even large boats don't make it, let alone hikers in blow-up packable rafts.
Even one of the bush pilots is like, oh yeah, I'll probably be down there and I'll have to rescue you. But
that was the final stretch of their four-month-long trip. Less than 1 mile in a nearly 2,500-mile journey. So Bindi and Nguyen came prepared with food and supplies, took their time, and waited for safe conditions. Bindi says they made it across safely and with ease, traversed the island, and spent their final day at Cape Sarachef on the western side of Unimak.
Yeah, just waterfalls in so many caves. And we had 2 weeks of beautiful weather, getting views of Shishaldin, and being able to see the caldera on the island. It was really, really nice, that last section.
Bindi says the hike was made up of smaller sections that he and Nguyen slowly pieced together. From Yakutat, he hiked across the Lost Coast, up the Copper River to the Wrangell Mountains, and up to Denali, into the Alaska Range, and finally into the Aleutian Range. He says he and Nguyen took the hike week by week without thinking too much about their final destination. Along the way, Bindi says he encountered some hair-raising and literally sticky situations, including glacier river crossings and deep, treacherous pockets of mud that left him trapped just 200 feet from a grizzly bear. Not only did Bindi have predators, icy temperatures, and dangerous terrain to worry about, but he says even small things, like salmon, were a cause for concern.
There was a fish that jumped in my boat. As I'm going across the Ugashik Bay, at night, at like midnight, because I took too much time off in town. And yeah, there's a fish that jumped in. And then right before that, I think a salmon or something that was trying to eat that smaller fish, like, hit my paddle. And I was like, oh man, if a salmon tries biting my boat, I'm like toast.
Now that he's back in Minnesota, doing odd jobs like masonry work, Bindi is less worried about killer salmon and more about saving up for his next adventure. After his four-month Alaska traverse, Bindi says he's got some saving up to do.
So now I'm at, like, ground zero, so I might actually have to work all year. We'll see, though. but South America is on the list. The Ural Mountains in Russia, Kazakhstan. There's a lot of different ideas that I would love to do. I just don't know.
Included in those, and probably first on the list, he says, is to finish a trip he started in India, making his way by motorcycle. And that's the news from Unalaska. I'm Maggie Nelson, and you're listening to KUCB 89.7 FM. Find us online at kucb.org. And please stay tuned for your local and marine weather forecasts.